Hello and welcome to the Stand Up Marketing Podcast, where in each episode we'll be showcasing and exploring a different area of tech marketing. We'll be talking with experts who share their experience, insights, and most importantly, provide you practical ideas that can be applied to your marketing strategy today. Tech marketing continues to evolve at a tremendous pace. It's often misunderstood and has a habit of taking itself too seriously. So join us as we tackle those issues and reveal what works, what doesn't, and how marketing drives revenue growth in tech. This is the Stand Up Marketing Podcast and I'm Richard Wright. In this episode, we're going to explore Google Ads, ably assisted by Barney Durrant, an ex-Googler who's been running his own successful digital agency for the past 9 years, specializing in Google Ads, SEO, content creation, and all elements of your digital strategy. Google Ads are an essential component of your demand gen engine, but whilst they can deliver quick results and high performance, they can just as quickly drain your marketing budget if you're not setting things up and tracking them correctly. In this episode, Barney gives you the 101 covering how to get started, how to best use the different ad formats available and what to consider when evaluating them, the pitfalls to avoid in managing your Google ad campaign, and also what he would consign to room 101 for eternity. My thanks to Barney for being a guest. I'll put his details in the show notes so you can check out him and his company, Bluebell Digital. If you need swift, impactful support with your digital campaigns, I thoroughly recommend you get in touch with him. So let's get to it and explore Google Ads. Hello, Barney. Thank you for joining me today. Why don't you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, Richard. And thanks for inviting me on. So my name's Barney Durrant. I've worked in the kind of internet industry for about 20 years. For the last 8 years, I've been running my own digital marketing consultancy, which is called Bluebell Digital. For that business, I do a lot of Google Ads, which we're talking about today. Also do SEO, paid social media advertising, copywriting, analytics and training on digital platforms. Before I ran this business, I used to work for Google in London, working with kind of big brands like Vodafone, T-Mobile, Nokia and Apple on all the stuff that Google does, all the kind of paid products. So again, mainly Google Ads, YouTube, mobile advertising, display advertising.
So pretty comprehensive. There's a lot in there. And as you rightly say, Google Ads is what we're going to be concentrating on to today. Now, I've got to admit, you know, I've used Google Ads in the past and I've got, you know, what I think is a reasonable handle on it in that I can do basic things and, you know, create campaigns and work my way around the dashboard and panel. But that then actually in the process of kind of doing some research for today and trying to read up on, you know, understand Google Ads a bit more, became apparent that I really don't have much of a clue and I've merely brushed the surface. So I think for the purposes of today, yeah, you're certainly going to have to sort of guide me through it. And Google Ads is kind of like, it's one of the first things that technology and SaaS companies do when they're creating their marketing engine. For those organizations, B2B organizations, who are looking to launch Google Ads campaigns or they're starting to dabble, you know, what do you consider the main considerations to ensure they're set up for success?
Yeah, I mean, there's a few different elements to it. It's not a good idea probably just to kind of rustle up a budget and go sort of headlong at it without, you know, kind of thinking about a few things. I mean, one of the main things I suppose to think about is this is a slightly self-serving thing to say, but getting someone who knows what they're doing to run it. You know, I certainly see a lot of people I had a classic one actually the other day. Someone from one of my clients, one of the managing directors at the client said, "Oh, can you help us with this other company that we have?" And I was like, "Yeah." And he started to explain it to me in the email, and he was just saying, "Oh yeah, because at the moment it's being run by someone's cousin who doesn't speak English very well." And that's just kind of a typical example. Probably want to speak English if that's, you know, what you're trying to advertise to. You want to have a basic understanding, or even quite a good understanding of how Google Ads works. Don't just kind of hand it to someone who says they kind of know how to do this or has once run a campaign. You know, if it's a serious kind of business, you're spending quite a lot of money, obviously you don't want to kind of hand that to someone who doesn't really know what they're doing. So obviously seek out an agency, seek out a freelancer or someone who's had experience in-house you know, to run that campaign. There is, you know, a reasonable amount of complexity to it, and you'll get better results if you get someone who knows what they're doing running it. The other aspect I would think about, which probably seems obvious, but again, a lot of the results, even if you have a fantastic campaign run by, you know, someone who's really experienced, knows what they're doing, knows all about, you know, the sector that you're in and all that kind of stuff, your website is going to be a crucial part of the deal as well. So, not, you know, if, even if you deliver people to the website from a really good campaign that's really relevant, you know, and the people that you deliver there are really good prospects for that business, it's all set up really well, and they're ready to buy. You know, if the website then is disappointing to those people, or if there's sort of technical issues with it, if it's too slow, you know, if it just doesn't really serve the purpose well, if people can't find what they want, if the pages aren't well designed, if people are put off by the kind of maybe complexity of how you're describing your offer, all this kind of thing, that's all going to be negative. So, you know, sending loads of traffic to a bad website is always you know, a really bad idea. And just think of the kind of physical example in the real world. If you set up a shop and it was all kind of broken down and it's hard to get around, there's stuff on the floor, it's a bit dirty, people are going to be keen to arrive there. They can look at it and think, I'm not going to buy anything here. Or maybe they, you know, they just can't figure out how to buy it on a website, which is can be the case if things are a bit too complicated. And you know, some of the kind of clients I'm sure you have kind of reasonably complicated sort of software or stuff to explain, so that can be an issue. And I guess I kind of touched on it already, but not just the kind of the content, I suppose, of the, and the design of the website, but there can be just practical things like the speed of the website, for example. Not everyone will know this, but Google will penalise you if you have a website that is too slow loading. And there's ways that you can kind of check on that online and do a sort of free test and see. It's called a Google speed test. I think if you search for that, you'll find it. Put in the URL of your company in there, and Google will give you a load of quite detailed suggestions on what might be slowing down your website. And it'll give you a traffic light assessment. It'll say, you know, red, amber, or green. Green, obviously, fine. And it'll do it in mobile and desktop versions. But it actually gives you the kind of information you'd probably have to pass on to a developer or someone who kind of understands the technical aspects of a website, but they'll give you lots of advice on specific things to do to improve the speed. So it's kind of fixing some of those things probably before you start advertising. It is really important because all of those things will be a drag on your sort of conversion rate and how many sales or leads or whatever you're looking to get that you actually get. And you know, you might do the advertising with a poor website, for example, and then kind of say, well, Google Ads doesn't really work for me, but you know, you haven't perhaps given it the best chance to succeed.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I'd imagine, and I've come across it, and I dare say you have as well, is if the call to action or the copy isn't right, if, as you say, the website is confusing and doesn't immediately answer the problem that the ad is suggesting it can answer, then it's not Google's fault that campaign doesn't convert.
Yeah. I guess, just to add to that, actually. Sorry, just to say, also, I guess, even with the good website, fantastic campaign set up by someone who knows what they're doing, I guess the third element, which can't always be controlled especially by the person who's running it, will be your offer. So, you know, is your offer competitive in the market? You know, is a competitive space? Most companies are going up against several other companies, do similar things. You know, how does your offer compare in the market? Can you offer discounts? Can you kind of have a good call to action, as you said? Have you got USPs that you can describe in the ad? So it's, you know, it's not just the campaign, it's not just the destination, it's also your offer. Is that a good offer? Because again, if you've got a terrible offer that you're trying to sell into a market, everyone else is cheaper or better or both, then that's going to make you struggle as well.
So once you've made that decision that you think you've got the message, the call to action, the website set up sufficiently, you're going to invest some money into Google Ads, what are the different formats that people should be considering? And also the approach to, you know, creating an ad group structure, what are the considerations there?
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of different kind of products, I guess I'd call them, that you could use, or ad, as you say, ad formats or campaigns. The most basic one that pretty much everyone would do, which is the one that most people use, you know, are search ads. So that's the sort of basic format that you see. You type something into Google, you see an ad above the results and below the results, and then back. And if you can remember, sort of 5 years ago, you would have seen them down the side of the results. But yeah, so that is your basic search ad. You click through. It's pay per click, you know, PPC, pay per click. So it literally means you pay every time someone clicks on the ad, and that's the thing that's built, you know, Google into the sort of multi billion pound dollar company that it is today. And that's probably still a very much large part of what people tend to spend on Google. And the good thing about that is it's a very direct way of just bringing people straight to your website quickly, based on sort of relevant searches. People say what they want, you show them something that you've got that matches that, they hopefully go to a page that talks about that specific product. That's what you're kind of aiming at. So that's what pretty much everyone will do. And that's very much kind of performance related. So you'd hear it called, you know, performance marketing, because it's bottom of the funnel. It's just very action orientated. People are going to buy, or they're going to, you know, you're going to get a lead from that. So if you're looking for that kind of activity, kind of short term, potentially active performance marketing, then doing search is what you'll do. Chances are that could be a large part of your budget, especially for a SaaS kind of company looking to generate leads or sales. The other kind of things that you can do, there's a number of different sort of formats or places you can put your ads on Google. One would be display, so you can do just the kind of typical display advertising that you see all around the internet using Google's display network. That is basically a collection of websites. There's loads of publishers and different companies, blogs, even down to sort of quite small blogs, up to kind of huge companies like say, The Telegraph or something. They'll have Google advertising on their websites, and they will use that to monetize their websites effectively. And Google takes, well, something like 30-40% of what's spent, and the publisher gets the rest, so there's a kind of split between the two. And yeah, for advertisers, then you can place your ads all around this network using different types of ways of targeting. Do you want me to get into all the different types of targeting you can use? There's sort of four.
I think if you can go into that level of detail, that'd be great.
Yeah. So you can basically for this kind of advertising, you're using images. So, you know, display is going to be image based or video based potentially. Often it's going to be more about brand advertising, not always, but kind of more towards that kind of brand advertising impact. Yeah, so there's lots of different things you can do. You can do remarketing, which will be, or sometimes called retargeting, and that's going after people who visited your website. So if someone comes to your website, we've all seen it. We've been to, I don't know, Marks Spencer's, looked at a jumper online and haven't bought it. And then that kind of jumper's followed you around the internet for a week or two. It's just that principle. You'll be showing ads to people who've been to your website and for a sort of period of time, whatever you choose. It could be 30 days, could be 60 days, depending on the kind of life cycle of your product. Yes, that's quite an effective thing to do. Sometimes can be a bit annoying, but it's an effective way to kind of remind people, especially when you've got something which is quite complex to buy. One visit to the website might not be enough, so actually kind of reminding people over a period of time might be an effective way to get them to buy and to remind them about you know, your brand compared to other brands. So that's one form of display advertising. There's quite a few kind of personalized or behavioral targeting, you might call it, ways of targeting people. Again, that's rather than targeting things that, you know, you might target a kind of series of categories, of interest categories. Personalized advertising or behavioral advertising is targeting people. So that's based on people's browsing behavior. So for example, good example of this is, say, you know, Richard, you decide you want to buy a new car. You'll start looking around on the internet. You might be reading, you know, Autocar or different publications. You might be looking at reviews, doing all this sort of thing, looking at car dealerships. Well, Google will pick up, as soon as you start doing that behavior, Google will understand, oh, look, Richard's cookie on his computer seems to be looking at all these car sites, and it puts you into a bucket of someone's looking to buy a car. So they call it in-market advertising. You're in the market to buy a car. And then obviously that's really valuable data for car companies or for dealerships who want to sell you a car, so they would be on that kind of targeting. And then probably a third way is, rather than, again, targeting the person and their sort of browsing behavior, you're targeting actual sites. So the sites are all categorized, so you could go for, again, car sites or holiday sites or whatever it was. And if you're a travel company, you stick your ads on the travel sites, and then hopefully you sell a holiday. So that's another way of doing it. And probably a third way, maybe, is rather than using categories, rather than using categories, you use actual individual sites. So you choose a whole load of sites from the network, research them, you place your ads on them, and it's very kind of direct. You know exactly where your ads are appearing sort of before you start. But yeah, I think remarketing is probably really popular. It goes really well with search. It's still a kind of performance marketing thing because it's quite close to search in terms of the way it converts. It's still direct response. When I worked at Google a long time ago now, they acquired YouTube, So YouTube is part of that display network, and obviously, you know, a huge part of that network, being an owned property by Google, but also a, you know, really huge popular site. So there's lots of video advertising formats you can use. So you can place your video ads, so a short ad, probably 30 seconds to a minute, that kind of length, you can place that. If you've used YouTube, which most people have, you go on there, you want to watch, I don't know, the trailer for Avatar, and then before you can watch that, a little ad pops up saying, do you want to buy this? And you have the opportunity to skip that. And those are called skippable ads. They are very similar to PPC, but they're pay-per view. So you only pay for the views you have. So that's a really good way. If you've made some videos, you place them on YouTube on your channel, your brand channel. If you want to promote those videos, you might have made these amazing videos, but you know, you want to get them out there to get to actually someone to see them. Then you can do some advertising through Google, and you can promote those on this kind of pay-per-view. And it can be quite cheap as well. So you can just pay, I don't know, just a penny a view, or you know, 2 pennies a view. So you don't have to have a huge budget to actually rack up quite a considerable number of views. You can also see your brand channel. You can see it as a kind of destination itself. You can put a series of videos on there. People subscribe to the channel, and then over time, obviously, the more and more people subscribe, every time you actually put a video out, you've actually got an audience there, and they get an email saying there's a new video from Samsung or a new video from whatever company. And there's obviously an audience, kind of an organic audience there already, but you can boost up those videos if you want to using advertising. The only other thing that's probably relevant that's not too niche is app advertising, so you can promote apps. So if you had an app as part of your offering, you could promote that individually across, you know, Google Play and across the internet. So get your app sort of downloaded. That's fairly straightforward to do.
You've nicely proven my point there, because when I said at the top where I thought to myself going into this, I put together a basic search campaign, yeah. with exact match. But then actually, when you start to understand the range of options and ways of slicing it up that are available, it can get a bit bewildering. And I guess, for technology brands and service B2B, et cetera, it's about finding the right balance. I'm interested to know, though, if you're a software as a service organization, maybe you've got a limited budget, or you've got a limited resource to actually support, and you want to use it predominantly for, you know, generating leads and interest and driving traffic to the site, as opposed to brand awareness, general engagement activity. Would your focus be on the retargeting and search over video ads, for instance? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, for those kind of companies, generally, yeah, search is going to be your absolute kind of go-to. It's probably going to be 80 or 90% of your budget. It really just depends on what your goals are. If your goals are all around leads, then you're really just going to invest in search. You're going to have a really good search campaign. You're going to cover all your different products with keywords and different campaigns and ad groups. And that's going to work, you know, pretty well for you. The other things you can do, remarketing perhaps is one you could do that will go into that display side of things. But as I said, it's a display format that is closer to search in terms of performance, because people are qualified. You know, they've been to your website, they've proven they're interested, so they're not just some random person who's seen a sort of brand ad on the Telegraph or some other site that's relevant. There are people who've shown an interest. They may have come, you know, from the search campaign itself, so it's all kind of linking together. But they're qualified, so they go into the pot, and there's a fair chance that they might also convert. Probably won't convert quite as well as search, but maybe just slightly more expensive, and can influence search as well. Even if they don't convert on the remarketing campaign, they may have been brought back to convert by searching for your brand name or searching for one of your products. So the actual kind of bounty for that or the credit is given to the search campaign, but it can still be influenced by the remarketing campaign. It kind of closes the loop a little bit. So remarketing, search, and then the other formats. So video advertising, a lot of display is a little bit more brand orientated. So it's a longer term thing. Perhaps it could be good for if you're launching a product, for example, if you're trying to build awareness of a new product. That's actually one thing to say about search is really good at giving you customers who know about something. So obviously, because they're searching, they're writing it into the search engine. If you're trying to launch something that's completely new, that people haven't heard of, they don't really understand what it is, then search isn't so good, because there's not going to be the terminology, there's not going to be the demand for that product because it's kind of a new thing. So that's where maybe sort of brand orientated advertising, display advertising, video advertising, that does a better job because you're trying to introduce something, you're trying to push something to people they've never really heard of or they don't understand what it is or why it's good. So if you are branching out or you're doing something a bit different or your product just in itself is a new kind of thing, then search sometimes can be not so good because it's really based on that demand. If that demand isn't there yet because you haven't sort of developed the market, then it's not going to work. Or at least you want to do something to generate the demand and to do search as well to capture the demand. But it is capturing demand that's kind of already there. It's people are literally going to write in what they want. So if they find it hard to sort of express that, they just don't know they want it yet kind of thing, then it doesn't work so well. So it's not good at introducing new things, search. But the brand stuff would be. But search is going to be your mainstay, I would say, remarketing possibly. And then, if you want to maybe launch products or build awareness, video and some of the other types of display would be your go-to.
What are the relative merits of sort of broad match search versus using phrase and exact match? You know, intuitively, I want to say that, you know, if you've got a smaller budget or you've got a more focused market, then exact and phrase match are the way to go. You know, broad match, if you've got a pushing more along the awareness side of things, and A, is that fair? And B, if so, when is the right time? Is there a right time to use broad match?
Broad match is an interesting one. So one thing maybe to say before talking about that is that Google is increasingly pushing sort of automation in Google Ads. What that means is that if you did Google Ads, say, 5 years ago, you would have to pretty much do everything manually. You'd have to change your bids. To combat that, there were sort of automatic bid management tools that people sold. But you'd have to pay for that. Big agencies would use that potentially. And that would kind of go into the API of Google and do lots of changes kind of automatically based on rules that you created or different things that you created. And that would do some of the kind of heavy lifting, I suppose, for really big accounts especially. But over time, Google's kind of automating a lot of stuff and putting in these automated options. Some of them are kind of really good. And you can use things like now you can just switch off manual bidding so you don't have to change bids yourself. And Google kind of takes care of the bidding and you kind of switch it to maximize conversions, it's called, so it gives you the most conversions for your budget, or you can set a certain ROI that you want. You want to sell £40 a sale, it doesn't guarantee that, but it will try and kind of adjust that it does do that. That works well if you have a good history to base it on, because what Google's doing is really looking back at your history of conversion and saying, right, let's try and get people or kind of situations that kind of match to your past history. The reason I'm saying that is because a lot of the time now, if you spoke to someone from Google, their advice would be switch everything onto these automated settings and then put everything on broad. Now, I would say don't do that. That's an extremely dangerous thing to do. But that's what they would say because they just want you to spend loads of money. And they're not motivated by what's good for you. They're mainly motivated by what's good for Google and for their targets. So broad has always been a difficult thing. And it's something that most, I think, Google Ads professionals will tell you to steer away from. There are some circumstances where it can be useful. But it is broad, and the thing is, broad is broader than it used to be. So Google has really kind of, also slightly controversially, kind of loosened the definitions of everything. So even exact is not as exact as it was, say, 5 years ago or 3 years ago, because Google's kind of slightly kind of changed the rules a little bit and made it a bit more broad. Again, slightly in their interest rather than necessarily in the advertiser's interest. Professionals would just mainly use phrase and exact, and just to sort of say what those are. Phrased, it will be, if you look in your account, you'll see some keywords, probably mainly ones with several keywords, phrases, as it's called, phrase. And they're in, so I shouldn't do this on a podcast, I was doing the quotation mark sign there. Quotation marks around them is for phrase. So you'll have, see, two words with quotation marks around them. That'd be phrase match. What that means is, for example, you have red shoes. In phrase, that means it will match to stuff that has red shoes in it, but both words in it, not just red or not just shoes. So that's kind of fairly safe then. You say, right, I'm all about red shoes. Doesn't matter if it says red and green shoes or red stripy shoes or red trainer shoes or red formal shoes. I'm just all about red shoes. Red shoes is my product and I'm really happy about that. So again, you've got to be careful with that. So that can, you just kind of thinking about understanding what it means and think about what the consequences could be. And even if you haven't really thought it through, checking as you launch it to check if there's stuff coming up, because there's stuff you may not have thought of that you'll match to, and then exact is the safest thing. So yeah, exact is just as it kind of suggests, it'll only match to exactly. So if you put red shoes exact, that means only if someone types in red shoes will your ad appear. So it's really safe. The more stuff you get onto exact, the better. The more you can kind of, there's a optimization process, very typical optimization process for Google Ads, will be to look over a period of time. I would probably do this with my clients maybe on a weekly basis for a fairly busy account. Look back for the previous week, probably by campaign or sometimes ad group if it's a bit bigger. See what everything's been matching to. And then even if you've got quite a mature account, you'll always spot things sometimes which are not right. So any relevant things you'll add as a negative, and that just stops it appearing for that if there's that word is used in the search string. And then the opposite way is if you see lots of good combinations of things which you haven't got already in your account, and it will tell you that actually as you look on the report that you'd use, you can have those in. And you add those in exact. So gradually adding more and more exact terms. And they're all data points as well. So the more keywords you have, the more, especially if you've got a bigger kind of campaign, you'll see all the data against those individual keywords. So it gives you more of an idea of what exactly is working, what is driving success, what is not really working, you know, and then you can act upon that kind of accordingly. So most people, I would say, just to summarize, most people who know what they're doing will use many phrase and exacts. Occasionally you might use broad, but really approach with caution. And yeah, completely ignore anyone for Google who tells you to switch everything on to broad, because that will be a disaster.
You alluded to it there about, you know, the need to regularly check in on, you know, on a weekly basis or whatever, yeah, to be monitoring these things. And I know one of the mistakes I've made in the past is, whilst I haven't necessarily been creating the campaigns, I haven't been monitoring them in the right way. And you can sometimes get distracted, and you certainly can't treat whichever way you're setting them up. You set the expectation that they're in place and you're going to let them run. Now I'm going to go and work over on this other thing, and then you neglect them. Then you're just throwing money away. So one of the other questions I'm interested to know is, you know, what common mistakes you see organisations make in their ad campaigns?
There are a lot of pitfalls, I suppose, that you can make. Definitely, as you say, monitoring is important. So even if you make, you know, kind of, as I say, a kind of mistake in terms of you throw a keyword in on broad or something else, if you're checking regularly, you will hopefully, you know, pretty quickly pick that up and observe that suddenly your ads are being shown to all these different things, and it's not relevant, and add them as negatives or change the match type or whatever you need to do. So yes, yeah, so the checking is definitely important. Definitely have a routine of checking, whatever's kind of practical, I suppose. But just bear in mind, if you are spending quite a lot of money for your company, you know, it's worth checking. So the more you spend, you know, the more you perhaps want to check or spend time on it. It kind of makes sense to do that. Other things that people do, there's easy things you can do actually wrong. Again, Google can be a bit naughty in the way that it encourages you to set up campaigns. So if you didn't really know that much about how Google Ads works, and you start to set up a campaign, Google will, along that process, actually encourage you to do various things which I would say definitely don't do. So one of those things, for example, will be that it will encourage you to opt all your campaigns into the display network as you set them up. Now, you don't want to do that because you probably don't want to do display. And certainly if you're just starting off, you want to just probably focus on search, get that right, and then think about whether you want to do display in the future and what kind of display you want to do and all that sort of things. You don't just kind of opt into display and start showing your ads randomly on display without kind of really thinking about it. Because as I said, most people, especially for these sort of SaaS companies, for B2B, will be looking mainly at search. So again, that's Google trying to tempt you into doing something that you don't want to do. So don't do that. Other things that you want to look at, actually in the same kind of process, one thing which is a bit sneaky, when you're doing your targeting, be really careful. Back in the day, quite a while ago, Google would start off with they don't do this anymore actually, but they did used to do this. The default for your campaign would be all countries and territories, which means the entire world. So you'd set off your campaign targeting the entire world. That was the default. So obviously that did used to catch some people out, quite a lot of people, and they'd start off their campaign literally targeting the entire world, which generally didn't work well because most people are not targeting the entire world, as you could expect. And even if you were targeting the entire world, you'd probably want to do it in the language of the entire world rather than, again, having one English campaign that targets the dialogue. So that was a bit of a moneymaker, I'm sure, for Google over the years. But eventually they started defaulting to the country that you're based in. So that's much better. So it'll default to the UK, which will probably most of the time is what will be... whatever you want to do, just make sure you're targeting what you think you're targeting. Also, be careful of London. You know, make sure it's London, UK, not London in Ontario. Or, you know, and Google gives you a little summary of how many people it thinks is in that territory. So that might give you a clue if you get the wrong one. Other things to look out for with that. There's a kind of advanced, I think it's in targeting, there's a kind of advanced settings drop down. You want to drop that down. What Google will have it on as default is that it shows your ads to people who are searching for things, but also people who are interested in your area. So what that means is that generally you want it to be precisely people who are in your area, because you just want to show your ads to people in the UK. There is a setting that is the people who are interested in your area or your country. That's really for travel advertisers. So if you were trying to sell holidays in the UK, but you also wanted to sell them to people who are interested in holidays in London, in France, then you might choose that, because that would be people who search for a London holiday, but they happen to be in France as well. That's only really good for travel, for very sort of specific use cases, but again, Google defaults to that. So you want to change it to people in your country, because otherwise you're going to get a few. So that's one to change. Other stuff in terms of mistakes, yeah, I mean, see, it is easy to, I suppose, to do that. Yeah, I mean, the matching thing is an easy one to get wrong. There's lots of small things you can do. There's lots of, I suppose, there's kind of maybe more sins of omission that you can do in terms of there's lots of elements now to the ads which you can kind of add on, which is quite easy to set up a campaign and just have a basic, you know, you've got your keywords, you've got your ads, and that's it. You kind of set it live. But actually, there's a whole load of other stuff you can add to that. And those are mainly called extensions, ad extensions, and a whole series of different ones. There's site links, which are like a series of sort of small ads below the main ad, and that can go kind of lead to other things. So going back to, say, you search for a brand, use Vodafone again. So you search for Vodafone. Vodafone doesn't really know what you want from Vodafone, so then Vodafone might do site links that say iPhone, Android phones, mobile broadband, and something else that Vodafone does, broadband. So yeah, four different things. So then you go straight through to that, rather than just kind of going to the homepage and having to navigate around. So that's a useful one. Most people use that. There's things called callouts. Callouts are like just two or three words. And there'll be things like free delivery, next day delivery, great customer service. So they're things that are just kind of USPs or things about the whole company. Just good stuff. They're not clickable. But those are the kind of things that will go under every ad. You'll say, we've got great customer service, we do next day delivery, all that kind of stuff. So you might have two or three of those. There's other things like the telephone number. So you can have your telephone number below your ad, which again is a useful thing to do if you want to generate calls. You can also track that. Google will use a forwarding number. So you'll ring a number. It will go through to your normal number, but it goes through sort of Google's forwarding number. That means that Google can know the length of the call. And then you can use that as a proxy for conversion. So you can say, I'll call it a conversion if the person speaks to me for a minute. So it just kind of gets rid of calls which are by mistake, or, you know, people just click on accident, or they're just short, or they're the wrong numbers, whatever. And you just use that as a proxy. It's not a precise thing. You don't know that's definitely a conversion, but something kind of meaningful has happened.
We mentioned a couple at the start of the conversation, didn't we?
Yes. In terms of, yeah, that helps everybody.
There was... A couple at the start of the conversation around the call to action, the copy, making sure your website's set up to, you know, induce a conversion, etc.
I suppose actually that's worth mentioning. That's worth mentioning actually. We haven't really talked about conversion, but yeah, what would be a mistake, I suppose, is to set your campaign going, but to have no way of measuring it. So it's really super important. Just really the basis of everything you do is you need to measure what you're doing. Generally, for sort of SaaS or B2B companies, a lot of the time they want to drive a lead rather than necessarily e-commerce. So if you're driving a lead, you've got a contact form probably, you might have the phone calls. Well, the phone calls will be covered. You can track those, what I was just talking about. But for contact form or any kind of, say, I don't know, free trial, request a demo, all those kind of typical things, you could track that form. So you would track the form, you'd take some tags either from Google itself, or you can do this by creating a goal in Google Analytics, if Analytics is linked to Google. And you create a conversion, basically, so that every time that form is successfully filled out from a click from Google Ads, you get a number that appears. So you can see how many times that happens. And then at the end of the month, you say, right, we spent £1,000, we generated, you know, 20 leads. Is that good? You know, and I guess the next step of that, actually, which is a mistake that people make, they may do that. So they may have these conversions tracked, and then therefore you've got something. You can say, well, I know we've generated 20 contacts or 20 people emailed the company. But I guess the big question, which is begged from that, is what does that mean? And you need to know that. So this is really a responsibility of the client rather than perhaps the person managing, that they can kind of help them to do it. But the client's got to understand their own CRM. So they've got to have a CRM for a start, and they've got to understand how it's working, and they've got to make sure that someone is kind of ticking a box or whatever the mechanism is, whether using HubSpot or whatever kind of type of CRM you might be using, to attribute that back to Google Ads. So you can say, right, okay, so we've got 20 leads in from Google Ads. We've got them all in HubSpot or all in whichever CRM we use. We can see what happened to those. We can trace those through the sales process. 10 of those leads, they were rubbish. They were not relevant, or they just weren't the right kind of companies. But 10 were fantastic. And 10 of those leads generated 20,000 quid. You spend £1,000. That's a 20 times ROI. Everyone's really happy. So that's what you've got to get to, really, if you want to understand, you know, what the ROI is of your advertising. It's no good just saying, we spent some money, we sent some clicks. You know, what does that really mean? It's not really that good to say we spent some money, we got some clicks, and we got some leads. But again, what was the quality of the leads? Were they the good leads or the bad leads? So yes, you need to really ultimately, if you can, and you should be able to, is just attribute everything back to where it's come from. And this obviously applies to any marketing, not just to Google.
Yeah, I can agree more when it comes to making sure the attribution is in place, because that's... saves a lot of arguments further down the road, and it's just best practice. It's good hygiene. It's a good sort of habit to, it's the right habit to get into, not just when it comes to Google, but other advertising channels as well, whether it's LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, wherever it is, but also third party events, whether it's something that's been sourced organically from the website. If you create those sources early on and make sure that there's some level of attribution, even if it's just first touch or last touch, it's better than nothing. Of course, you want to aspire to get into a multi-touch attribution model, but we're talking about progressing things. So obviously we've talked about what to consider when setting up, how the different types of ad formats that are available, the common mistakes to avoid. And I guess my final question is, and this is sort of slightly tongue-in-cheek, but it's something I ask everyone. And I mean, what is the one thing or issue associated with Google Ads that you would banish forever if you got the opportunity?
That's an interesting one. I'm sure there's plenty of things I can think of. I think I've kind of touched on it a little bit before. And I would say that, you know, especially if you... so have a decent sort of amount of budget, you're spending a lot of money with Google, then you will attract Google's attention. And I know this, more than probably a lot of people do, because obviously I used to work there, so I know exactly how they're targeted and how they work. But yeah, that they are, quite overzealous in contacting you, especially if you spend, obviously a lot of money, that they'll be even more keen to contact you. And yeah, just bear in mind, I mean, they can be helpful. They're not terrible people or anything, but... and they are salespeople, and they will mainly focused on giving you advice, which will probably make you spend more. So they really will be sort of looking at that kind of stuff, and they'll also be very keen to get you to kind of sign up to lots of new products, because again, they would have been tasked with get everyone onto the new thing that's come out, and they'll kind of to a certain extent kind of blindly go out to the market and try and get everyone to do that. So if you do have meetings with Google account managers and those kind of people, just take what they say with a bit of a pinch of salt. They can be useful. They can give you access to sort of beta tests. They can give you product information. They can give you, sometimes if you're a bigger advertiser, they might give you market information. That's definitely useful. And they can help you with problems. So that's good. But I just say, on the negative side, they may encourage you to be a little bit over enthusiastic about certain things, which might not be appropriate for your brand or for your company. The other thing I'd watch out for as well, I'd put in 101, is auto-applied recommendations. This is kind of similar. This is all kind of like the automated version of Google Rep. So Google has set up a kind of system of recommendations in your account. And again, it kind of says to you, well, add these keywords. Oh, put everything onto Broad. Oh, opt into the display network. And these all just kind of come up in little boxes in your account. Again, don't do that necessarily. So look at every option. Is it going to be sensible? What's going to be the impact? They'll make it very easy for you. You can just tick a box and suddenly, you know, the whole account is opted into the display network, or everything's they've suggested has turned into a Broad keyword. Don't do that, basically. Take those recommendations as a kind of Bible. Look into each one, assess it, is it going to work? And if you do opt into stuff, especially stuff that you're not certain about, make sure you really monitor it and see if it's working. So again, I'd put that in 101. Google just gets a bit overexcited with itself, has some things which save time, and perhaps they're good. Some of the things are good if you are, a small company that's using Google, you don't have much time or expertise, you might sign up for some of these things, and perhaps it kind of helps you a little bit, perhaps it saves you time. But actually, you get to a kind of high level, if you're spending a lot of money, there should be some expertise there, and you should be able to make your own decisions. You shouldn't just be kind of relying on some of these tools, which are kind of perhaps good at making things a bit faster, but not always going to give you the best performance or results for your campaign, and could potentially just waste money for you. And a lot of people would agree with me. That's not just something. It's not just a personal hang-up of mine. In fact, I'm probably more well-disposed towards Google than a lot of people are.
Yeah, I've had that issue in the past as well, where we spent a lot of money with Google on a on a monthly basis, and you know, whenever we got in touch with the account management with a big laundry list of questions and queries that we had, because we wanted to, you know, refine and you know, make sure everything was optimized, etc. It often felt that the conversation kind of quite quickly moved to further opportunities to spend more money with them. So yeah, I've experienced that as well, it's good advice as well. Brilliant. Well, listen, Barney, that's been a really helpful session, and has certainly opened my eyes to everything that Google has to offer, but also how to approach it, how to structure it, what to bear in mind, so that you're set up for success. So I just want to say thank you very much for sharing your time with us. When next time that I'm having to look at Google campaigns, I'll do with a little bit more confidence.
Good stuff. Yeah, thanks very much for inviting me on, Richard. And I hope that's useful advice for everyone.